I know what I'm saying because I mean we so take for granted, I fear, and maybe you don't. If from time to time you go to different churches, but we were sitting in that meeting and the district superintendent was talking about going to a church, and he said there was about 24 people in the room. I think he and Rosie made 25 and 26. And he said this lady got up to play the piano, never really accomplished that purpose, but that was a joke, see? That was a joke on the DS's part. And I sit there and I hear this, and I feel, on the one hand, so guilty, but on the other hand, man, we are so blessed. It just is stacked so deep. We are blessed people. And if you don't know, I'm not telling you to go somewhere else and find out, because I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying, whoo, we are blessed, and that was great. And it really, I mean, obviously, a baby changes everything. I got a really weird sermon that the wrong baby could have changed everything too. This is really a weird sermon, but it's a build-up to, this is all Old Testament stuff today, well, until the very end. We're going to go back to the Old Testament and say, O little town of Bethlehem. That's the sermon today. O little town of Bethlehem, we all know, and I'm not going to get into that yet, but we all know the significance of Bethlehem in the Christmas story. But listen to this, because this just shows me how God has had to orchestrate things that would not have had to have been, but knowing humanity and people the way we do and the way God does. Wow. So let's go. We're going to begin in Genesis 35 and just read two verses. Genesis 35, and we're going to read verses 18 and 19. And so it was, well, let me just, just fall in when I get here, okay? I'm going to go back and give you a little bit before that. Then they journeyed from Bethel, and when there was but a little distance to go to Ephrath, which is, you know, thou Bethlehem Ephratah, this is Ephrath, that's where they're going, Bethlehem. Rachel labored in childbirth. She had hard labor. Now it can, this is Jacob's wife. He had two wives and two concubines, you remember that. Rachel labored in childbirth, and she had hard labor. Now it came to pass when she was in hard labor that the midwife said to her, good news, do not fear, you will have this son also. And so it was, as her soul was departing, for she died, that she called his name Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. So Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is, Bethlehem. And Jacob set a pillar on her grave, which is the pillar of Rachel's grave to this day. Father, this is a part of the Christmas story. This is a, to me, very important part of the Christmas story. But sometimes we don't go back far enough to pick it up. And so I pray that this morning things will make more sense about that verse we're going to read in Micah because of what we read this morning. So help us learn something today, but also, Lord, help us to realize there's a decision even today for us in this message. Bless us, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. On the surface, how many of you right now think you might know why this story would have anything to do with Christmas? You know, I'm not going to call on you, but just if you think you might have a clue already. Two. Not many hands up. I figured that would be the case. It doesn't seem to make any sense at all, does it? But I believe you're going to find that it really is strangely actually important today. Let me just do the little quiz here. Where were they going? Bethlehem, Ephrath, Ephratah, it will be called later. They're on their way there, and Rachel, the actually the wife that Jacob bargained for first, and then got Leah, and then got the concubines, and he had all these 12. This is number 12. He had all these sons. Benjamin, they don't get there. She actually dies, which is not the part of the story that I'm focusing on, but it's the reality of the story. I don't believe God brought about that as a judgment at all. But I'm going to tell you right now, God did not want Benjamin to be born in Bethlehem. God did not want Benjamin to be born in Bethlehem. This is crazy. I like it, though. I hope it speaks to your heart today. Benjamin, point number one, Benjamin represents the will of man. All right? Benjamin represents to us the will of man. We're going to go back and read 1 Samuel 8, 4 through 7. I'm going to try to. That's going to be in the next one. This one's okay. Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said to him, "Look, you're old and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like the rest of the nations." But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, "Give us a king to judge us," because Samuel was a judge. That's not in there. I'm just telling you. "Give us a king to judge us." So Samuel prayed to the Lord, and the Lord said to Samuel, "Heed the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me that I should not reign over them." Do you see why I said Benjamin represents the will of man? And you go, well, not yet. But do you see the will of man coming out in the elders of Israel coming to Samuel and saying, "Give us a king. All the other countries have kings, and we have judges who talk to God. We don't want that. We want to be like the rest of the world around us." And Samuel, it hurts his feelings, you could imagine. So he takes it to God, who he talked to, and God said, "Don't take it personal. They don't hate you. They hate me. They don't want me to tell them what to do. Give them what they want. Give them their own will, the will of man." Now, 1 Samuel 9, 1 and 2. You ready? "There was a man of Benjamin, a man from the tribe of Benjamin, whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeror." This is the part I couldn't wait to get to. "The son of Bechoroth, the son of Aphath, a Benjaminite, a mighty man of power, and he had a choice and handsome son whose name was Saul. There was not a more handsome person than Saul among the children of Israel. From his shoulders upward, he was taller than any of the people." Is it starting to make sense now? Saul comes from the tribe of Benjamin. And the people said, "That's our guy. Look at how tall he is. Look how strong he is. He's good looking. Man, if God would have ever chosen us a king, that would be him right there. That's the guy God would choose. So that's the guy we're going to choose." Now, they didn't ask God that. They chose him. They wanted Saul from the tribe of Benjamin. Do you see now that we're getting into a little bit of flakiness? See, Benjamin was born on the road. Can you imagine if they had made it to Bethlehem? Now, you know what the Bible's going to say, right? So I'm not there yet. But if they had made it to Bethlehem and Benjamin had been born in Bethlehem, there would have been a huge, huge battle going on when Israel started picking their own kings, and they would have said, "We're right to choose from the tribe of Benjamin. He's from Bethlehem." Do you see that? Now, I'm done. I mean, I've already made my point that God needed to hold Benjamin back because he had this other plan. You see? I mean, the story's so familiar. All I want you to do is go, "Oh, man, I've never thought about that." And I'm guessing some of you haven't. Some of you have because a few of you raised your hands. But most of us have never thought about Benjamin as being not the guy. And I remember having not a debate, But I remember having a discussion one time with a guy who said Jesus was from the tribe of Benjamin. And boy, I looked at him real funny, and I said, no, he wasn't. And he said, I'm pretty sure. He said, I'm going by memory, but I'm pretty sure he was from the tribe of Benjamin. And I said, well, I'm not, and I wasn't being bragging. I said, well, I'm not going by memory. Jesus was not from the tribe of Benjamin. He said, well, I'll look that up and get back with you. I said, let me know how that one works out. So he told me about a week later. He said, you know what? It wasn't Jesus at all. He was from the tribe of Judah. I said, I knew that last week, brother. I said, He was trying to make Jesus from the wrong tribe. He was trying to make Jesus from the tribe that represents the will of man. The Jews said, we want a king and we want it to be that guy right there, the Benjaminite, powerful, mighty, tall, good looking. But that wasn't God's pick. Now, the people rejected God and chose Saul, but God rejected Saul and chose his own guy. That's kind of funny how that works. So, let's go to Judah. Judah represents the will of God. We're going to read 1 Samuel 16:1. 1 Samuel 16:1 says, Now the Lord said to Samuel, How long will you mourn for Saul, seeing that I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I am sending you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided myself a king among his sons. Now, what if Benjamin had been born in Bethlehem? See, the war would have been on. It would have been the will of God versus the will of man. But Benjamin was born out in the country, did not make it there. He made it there, but not born there. This is just crazy. He says, Go to the home of Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided myself a king among his sons. Now, let's go on because I know you know that story. Saul is mourning because he anointed, Samuel is mourning because he anointed Saul, and so now Saul's his guy. He crawled out on the limb with the anointing oil, and he anointed Saul. Because God said, do what the people want. Give them what they want. When God says that, do you think he's always happy with what he does? When we do what we want and he's saying, go ahead, give them what they want. I'm telling you no. Because then he comes back and he tells Saul, Samuel, quit mourning for Saul, for I've rejected him. And you get up and go to Bethlehem and I'm going to show you a king. You know that story, Eliab. The oldest son of Jesse, stood up, walked up. Samuel thinks to himself, surely this is going to be the king. Look how tall he is. Look how strong he is. Look how good looking he is. Why, he's practically Saul. Ha! And God said, have we not been through that already? Let's don't be picking kings based on how tall they are. Gah! That's not him. Jesse, God has rejected all of them. This is all your sons? Oh, well, no. He said, I have one more, but he's young. He's a kid. I left him out tending the sheep. Surely you didn't want him here. He says, we will not do another thing till he gets here. And they brought in David, a teenager. Ruddy in appearance. I don't know what ruddy means. I think it means he had a couple of pimples. Bushy, bushy blonde hair. Had on flip-flops. Had a boombox playing Beach Boys music. I don't know anybody else to say. I went back to my teenage, so. I was one. I heard that laughter. They said, yeah, you rode to church in a horse and buggy. Of course, some people have. That's not bad. So that's you get the picture. You get the picture. He wasn't tall. He wasn't powerful. He wasn't the most handsome. But he was God's chosen vessel, and he was from Bethlehem. And God, for whatever reason, had said, my king is going to come from the tribe of Judah, not Benjamin. Huh, kind of crazy. And so here we go. Time goes on. Saul dies in a battle. David, this is so hard. We just have been having great Sunday school lessons. I might have already said this, but this is too good. This is too good. David, when he was still a teenager, fought Goliath of Gath, defeated him. Oh, man, this is so good. How many stones out of the creek, out of the brook? How many stones? 5. Y'all all know that. How many giants? What? 1 giant? 5 stones. How many misses do you think he was going to get? I don't mean wives now. I meant misses. Inopportune. The guy was a warrior. You miss once, you're dead. He's coming at you with a spear, a javelin, it says, and a sword. So David only had 1 good stone that he needed, but he picked up 5. Can I tell you something? There were 4 more giants in the camp. You go study that. There were 4 more giants in the camp, and they were supposed to kill them all, and they didn't, and they fought them until David was an old man. Now, the Amalekites, 1 Samuel 15. I'm making that part up. You can check it. Go and destroy the Amalekites. Utterly destroy them. Don't leave anything alive. They come back. Samuel meets him. What do I hear? Oh, that's the sheep, but it's the choice sheep. We brought them back to sacrifice to your God. I told you to kill everything, but you got to sacrifice. No, the sacrifice was in being obedient. To obey is better than sacrifice. It's actually a quote. And Samuel, an old man, says, somebody give me a sword. You're Agag, right? You're the king of the Amalekites. That's right. Well, here, let me, and he chopped him to pieces. That's not funny. But I find humor in it. Because Samuel is an old man, he can barely pick up a sword, and he says, hold him still. I'm going to, and he chops him to pieces. And he looks at Saul and says, that's what you were supposed to do. Now, when you learn something, you get back with me. And he went back home to Ramah. Wow. So, time goes by, and lo and behold, the Philistines attack that David should have destroyed, and who has to fight them? Anybody know? Saul. King Saul has to meet the Philistines when they attack. And then, at the same time, the Amalekites attack from the southwest. Guess who has to fight them? David. David has to fight the Amalekites, and Saul has to fight the Philistines. David and Saul, who were enemies now, end up fighting each other's battles because they were both God's battles. That will preach and teach all day long, but I can't stay there. All I'm telling you is God has a twisted sense of humor. Because if they'd both been more obedient, they would not have been right there. Man, that's good. So, the Amalekites, or the Philistines, kill Saul, mortally wound him. He falls on his sword. Now we're dropping into that story. This is 2 Samuel 2:4. Well, that's not when this is saying. This is the men who want David to be king. The men of Judah came. And there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. And they told David, saying, the men of Jabesh Gilead were the ones who buried Saul. And so he is now the king. Now, you already know the importance of Bethlehem in the story, right? David is from Bethlehem. Saul was a Benjaminite who was not from Bethlehem. And the people now go with David. Because the Benjaminite is dead. Micah 5:2. But thou, Bethlehem Ephratah, though you are little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of you shall come forth to me the one to be the ruler in Israel, whose goings forth are from old, from everlasting. Now that means that the plan from the beginning of time was that Jesus would come from the line of the offspring of one of the tribe of Judah who would be living in Bethlehem, not a Benjaminite. From the beginning of time, from everlasting. And his name was going to be Jesus, and he was going to be born about 1,000 years after this is happening. Well, not Micah, but David. Huh. Now, can you imagine if Benjamin, had Rachel lived, made it to Bethlehem, and that baby had been born, Benjamin had been born there, Micah comes along and makes this same declaration, and the people would have said, Saul was from Benjamin. He was from Bethlehem. Why not Saul? Why not the will of man? Why can't we usurp God and have our own way? Because God had a choice. God had made a choice, and he wanted it to be his son through David. Wow. The Jews would have put in place a decision, or would have been put in the place of making a decision about which tribe their king would come from. Isn't that easy? Because that's point three. So, which king will you choose? Which king will you choose? Because, see, you get the same choice. Every person in this room gets the same choice. Teenagers, you get to choose. The oldest person in the room, you get to choose. And every person in between, you get to choose. God's not going to make you choose Jesus. God's not going to make you reject Jesus. God's going to say, who would you choose? He set it up for us. He set it up for us, but we still have the right to choose the will of man or the will of God. Here it is. 1 Samuel 16:14. 1 Samuel 16:14. But the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and a distressing spirit from the Lord troubled him. Wow. God was done with Saul. And he kind of went crazy. And I'm not going to go into that distressing spirit from the Lord, because we had that in Sunday school last week too. When the Spirit of God leaves you, that opens the door for other spirits to come, evil spirits, distressing spirits. That's what happened to Saul. Saul got so away from God that he went to witchcraft to find out, because he didn't want to go to Saul, that Samuel the seer, Samuel was the judge. Saul didn't want to go to him anymore. So he went and hired a witch, the witch of Endor. Y'all familiar with this story? That'll make you want to go home and read 1 Samuel, won't it? Yeah. What? He did what? He hired a witch. And this was after the death of Samuel. She conjures up a spirit. Freaked her out too. Because God was messing with her and with Saul, I believe, at the same time. Wow. Man, don't think God isn't for real. And that you can't tick him off. I know. Some people say, oh, God, oh, he doesn't care. God is love. He doesn't care. God cares. He really does care when we insult him and his grace. He cares. So, let's now read 2 Samuel 7:15-17. But my mercy shall not depart from him as I took it from Saul, from whom I removed him before you. Your house and your kingdom shall be established forever before you. Your throne will be established forever. According to all these words and according to all this vision, so Nathan spoke to David. Now, we also did this in Sunday school last week, and it's kind of crazy because I've been planning this sermon for a long time, and tonight, the Sunday school lesson this morning was my tonight sermon. I just got that book. It's just, this is, I think, God's plan for the day. It's God's plan. I believe that with everything in me. The next prophet after Samuel was Nathan. And the guy after him, I'm trying to remember, I think his name was like Gad. He was a seer. Nathan was a prophet. And he went to David and said, your kingdom is going to be established now. Your throne is going to be established now, but it's going to last forever. Because guess who's related to David? You all know this, right? Jesus is a descendant of King David. Wow. You don't think God had this kind of worked out in his mind, how this was all going to go? I'm telling you, he did. God had this all planned out. So the choice Israel made is the same we still make. Do I want my way or do I want God's way? And if you say, well, you know, I mean, I think God is just so loving and gracious that he wants my way to be my way. He's happy when I'm happy. We just talked about that in Sunday school. You need to go look up the definition of joy. Jesus prayed in John 17:13, that my joy may be complete or fulfilled in them. And he wasn't praying, oh God, just make them happy. Just let them be happy. That's not what he was saying at all. And sometimes we, in our minds, we think God would just be happy if I'm happy. And so if I do something that makes me happy, God must be good with that. I think we missed something somewhere. We will all serve a king one way or the other. You all are going to serve a king. You're going to serve a king. Somebody is going to lord over you. That's just the way it is. Something or someone is going to lord over you. Don't let it be someone. It may be something. You get to choose. You actually get to put yourself in servitude to something or someone. Jesus explained it like this. This is Matthew 6:24. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. And mammon there doesn't just mean money, although certainly that's probably the chief in our world. It literally means stuff, possessions. And if you make possessions your master, there's never going to be enough money, and there's never going to be enough stuff. And I don't know if it's odd to you. I watch the news, and they'll say the little headline trying to get you to stay for the commercials and come back. And the other night on the evening news, they said, researchers know why America is so deep in debt. I'm like, really? We need researchers for that? I think I got that one. I'm not a researcher. It's called plastic. And now, so we just studied in Sunday school, the joy of the Lord gives patience. Wait. Wait on the Lord, I say. And we go, why wait? I got plastic. I'll pay it off on the installment plan. Juke. Give it to me now. We're still paying on stuff after it's broke, worn out, or we've outgrown it, or whatever. And we're still paying for it. But we have to have researchers who tell us why America is so deep in debt. It's because Americans put themselves under the lordship of mammon. And our neighbors have it, and we don't know how they can do it. They work like we work, and yet they seem to have more stuff. You say, well, how in the world did you get all that stuff? Oh, you know what? We got 2.3% interest on this credit card for 6 months, so we just went and bought a bunch of stuff, and we're going to pay as much as we can in 6 months. What happens if you don't? Well, then the interest rate goes up to 23%, and then we'll probably not go, duh! See, that's when mammon is your God. Stuff is your God, and you want your way. And I'm not saying you have to live like a pauper, man alive. No American. I'll back up from that. I'll tell you a story, only because I might have already told it. Jeff Wilson was telling me this story. They went over to Ottumwa looking for homeless people. Does Jesus love homeless people? This is a recurring theme, is it not? Does Jesus love homeless people? Who does he want to reach them? Us. Yeah, y'all are getting this one. So they go over. They find the guy in the tent. He says, really, you know, all I need is a little money to pay my cell phone bill and some of those green things to keep my furnace on. He said, I get by pretty good with food, and I got a tent and a sleeping bag, and so I'm pretty good as long as I can pay my cell phone bill. If homeless people, and I'm not crashing homeless people. They're homeless. But if you have to have a cell phone to constitute homeless, you say, well, man, I couldn't afford rent because I got to have a cell phone. Do you see what I'm saying? In America, our definition of poor is way better than the rest of the world. I was telling them about Fidel, who passed away this week, and I hope he's in heaven. I'm not judging Fidel evilly at all, but they were saying this week that the average salary in Cuba is $25 a month. That's the average income in Cuba. And people on TV go, Cuba's a great place. We ought to all be more like Cuba. And I'm going, yeah, you cut your salary and then get back with me. You go down to 25, you know, hello, that Cuba wasn't great. They killed people if you disagreed with them. They killed them. Wow. But they got their way. They got their choice. My son works at Pella, has since he was old enough to work. I'm not telling you he makes a bucket load of money, but he survives. A lady called our church one day, and I knew she was whispering, and she said, yeah, I was wondering, is there any way you could help me with some money? I've got behind on my bills. And I said, well, I said, I don't know. I said, do you have any kids? I said, we try to kind of help mothers with children. Well, no, I don't have any kids. I said, can I ask you a question? And she said, yeah. I said, why are you whispering? She said, well, I don't want the people around me to hear me talking, asking for money. I said, well, where are you? She said, I'm on a van on my way to Pella. I said, you're on a van on your way to Pella? I said, the window factory? She said, yeah, I ride a van to work. I said, you work at Pella, where my son works, and you are asking me to give you money because you can't pay your bills? She didn't get any money. I think I got to be done. So you're putting down on poor people. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I'm putting down on making bad decisions because we want our way. And if somebody else has something and you don't have it and you go buy it on credit, you want it your way. And you got your way. So when the bill comes, it's your way. It's your way. Don't call our church and say, could you help me pay my bill because I didn't manage well. I'm not against having anything. You buy all the new cars you want. You buy all the any clothes. You get you some nice sweaters, man. Talk to these kids. Find out where they get those sweaters. Some of them, I'm guessing, Goodwill would be the answer. I'm not sure, but I'm just saying. I'm not opposed to that. It's America. I'm not opposed to that. But you don't want to let stuff lord over you because Jesus said, the more you have stuff lording over you, stuff's going to say, don't listen to God. Don't listen to God. Listen to me. I'll make you happy. And yet you may not be so happy. And that'll be tough. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. How many of you already got three presents under the tree right now? How many of you? How many of you already using credit cards? No, don't raise your hand. It's December the 4th. I won't mention this stuff again for 21 days. I'm done with it. But you all know I'm telling you the truth, don't you? Stuff or Jesus? Bethlehem. Oh, little town of Bethlehem. How still we see thee lie. Oh, man. That's where he's from. That's biblical. 2,000-year-old story, and it's still just as relevant today as it was the 1,000 years before he was born and the 1,000 years before that. Stand with me this morning, would you? And God bless you with a Merry Christmas. I'm not messing with you. I'm not messing with you. I'm telling you, don't let it lord over you.